Hi, everyone. We are here with one of the Final Four contenders for the FDS Championships 2015. This is Titan Drake. Hi, Titan Drake.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. It's really an achievement to get to the Final Four. You had to beat a lot of people to get here. Some of them, except for that last guy, were really good.
Yeah, I guess for people who don't know, the person I beat to get into Final Four was Adam, so... Yeah, I mean,
so that one was easy, but the rest of them were pretty tough, right? So anyway, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what's your name, all that stuff?
Yeah, so my real name is Alex. Right now, I'm from California. Let's see. So I actually turned 21 like around a week ago. And right now, I'm a full-time student at UC Berkeley, studying computer science. I'm going to be graduating at the end of next semester, and then I'll have to figure out what I'm doing with my life, which is a vaguely worrying prospect, but that'll, come in its own time.
So you're just turning 21, and you only have a semester left. That seems a little bit young, is that right?
Yeah, so the way it works out is that my birthday is very late in the year, so it... I guess it was, a very interesting experience to, start college and still technically be, under 18, which was, I don't know, but it's just, for the class I'm in, then I'm, young for our year, which is, I'm okay with that, that's fine.
Sure. So you weren't, anything like a child prodigy and you're several years ahead,
I'm just a little bit younger than everybody else.
And way smarter, right?
I don't know about that. There are some crazy people here.
Yeah, we can go with way smarter. I like that. how long have you been playing Dominion? How'd you get into it?
Let's see. I would say it would have been summer... I'm trying to remember how far back. Probably, when I got into Dominion, it was sometime between the Seaside and Prosperity, and I met some people in real life, and then they told me, this game is called Dominion, and they asked, alright, so why should I play this game? And they said, do you play Magic the Gathering? And I said, yeah, or I used to play Magic the Gathering, I don't play it as much anymore. So they sold it to me as, this is like Magic the Gathering, but you don't have to keep buying new cards, which is very good for your wallet. So... that's, how they introduced me to it. I played a couple of times, and then I got very into it. So I would say, during that summer, I was playing it maybe, around, average of, 1 to 2 hours a day for, 5 weeks straight. And this is with, base intrigue and Seaside occasionally. So that adds up to, a lot of playtime. And that was how, I first got into Dominion. Sometime... after that, during the next school year, I found out about Isotropic, and then I started playing there, and I guess that's where I got most of my experience now. And that's how I got into Dominion, and I guess the reason that I keep playing it is that it feels like that the game is just incredibly deep in a sense that you keep playing, and I think I actually looked back and counted how many games of Dominion I have, and I have something 1900 on ISO, and then another 600 or 700 on the new client, and then I'm still finding out new things about the game, which is really mind-boggling to me, because I'm I don't even know how many hours in, probably at least 1,000 at this point, and there's still things about the game that I don't know yet, which is really exciting to me, I guess. And it's just a very well-balanced game, but it's except for, if you really don't like Rebuild or Urchin, which is, its own topic. Those are, a little weirder, but overall, it's just, a very nice game, and it's very simple to learn, and it just has this very deep, inherent complexity to it, which is really interesting.
So would you say that Dominion stole you away from Magic?
I would say that... it didn't so much steal me away as much as I didn't have as many people to play Magic with. Or when I was growing up, I used to play Magic mostly with my brother. And then once I went to college and I wasn't near my brother all the time, then I didn't really know people who played Magic in real life. So then I also wasn't really part of like any of like the online communities like MTG Online. So it just sort of like slowly like dropped out of my game playing, I guess. I guess I've been meaning to like look back at Magic and maybe try starting it up again, but then it does cost a lot of money, and Dominion is comparatively cheaper, and I seem to be like doing better in Dominion than Magic, so.
I see. So you would say that you play mainly in real life. That seems to be what really got you into sticking with Dominion, right?
So yeah, I would say I got into Dominion first by playing in real life, and then now I guess I actually don't really play Dominion in real life at all, or I do it very rarely because I don't actually own Dominion in real life. I only like got to play those like 5 weeks because I was staying with some people who did own like all of the sets so far, and then after that I've just like been only playing it online.
So you haven't played with Adventures yet at all, then, is that right?
Yeah, I haven't played with Adventures yet at all.
That's sad.
I
What do you think
mean,
about it?
yeah, I know. All of the events look really cool, and just all of the new cards, but I can't try any of them because I don't have Adventures, and I also don't know that many people around here who are willing to play, like, Dominion, like, I guess, like, several times instead of just, like, one or two times, because a lot of the games I've played in real life have been, like, occasionally it's, like, maybe like 1 to 2 new players and one player who's like reasonably experienced, but then they play like mostly like base plus one or two expansions. So it's a little, I guess it's like there's just this really big upfront cost to saying, let's buy all of the expansions and then let's schedule a thing where we can just like play every single week or something.
I see.
And I get, yeah. And also I'm just like busy with schoolwork and stuff.
That's not nearly as important as Dominion, though, right?
Yeah,
So you found Isotropic. How did you find ISO?
I think what happened is with the people I was playing with in real life, then once I headed back home for that summer or whatever, then we kept in contact, and then one of them pointed out, hey, there's this online Dominion server we can play on, and it has all the expansions for free. And then I guess that's how I found out. It was like word of mouth from other people who played Dominion.
Sure. So is that how you found the forums as well, or is that something else?
I think, let's see. So I would say that I found out about DominionStrategy.com just by like Googling around when I guess looking for strategy on Dominion. And then I checked that blog pretty regularly, and then I was around when the forums like actually first went up, which I guess is how I found out about it, just because I knew about the site, and then the forum came up, and then it was like, okay, I mean, I visit this site enough that I might as well make a forum account.
So have you been posting on the forums then since the forums began?
So like I thought I wasn't a very like big poster, and then I looked at my post count recently, and it was like 1,700, and I was wondering how that happened. So, okay, so I registered in June 2011, which I think is like pretty close to when the forums first started. And then I didn't post like super regularly, maybe just like one or two posts a day, or maybe like one or two posts every like couple days or something. But I guess when you like registered on a forum like 4 years ago, that just starts to add up.
Sure. So is it FDS, do you consider yourself one of the more active members or still just kind of easygoing? Has your usage increased over time?
Yeah, I would say that my usage has definitely increased over time. I think I mostly do reading. I don't do as many posts. I like post like a bit, but I would say that it is like definitely a big part of my life in that I will like pretty much check the forums at least once a day, and more likely like 5 or 6 times a day. Yeah.
Yeah, you're an FDS celebrity now that you made the Final Four, so it's
I
only
guess
going to
so. Yeah, I
increase.
mean, I'm still not actually sure how I got into Final Four because, from my perspective, I was just like, this is an interesting like single elimination tournament. Maybe I'll just join in and try a couple of rounds, and then I'll go out, and then it'll be fun. And now I'm in top four, and I'm not sure how that even happened, but I'm totally okay with this.
Yeah. So, which match were you most surprised to win?
I mean, that one definitely has to be the match against Steph, because that one was. I think that there's if you like go back to the video, there's like a moment on my final turn where I'm just like sitting there, and I have like the match ending play in my hand, but I'm not doing anything for maybe like 10 seconds or so, because all I'm thinking at the moment is, wait, I'm going to beat Steph here, and that just like completely like blew my mind pretty much. I think that, yeah, I would say that my win against Steph, I mean, I did win, but it wasn't like a super great win in a sense, because a lot of our boards were actually very simple and very straightforward. I mean, so the only board, there was exactly one board out of the six which had any way of playing more than one terminal at a given time. And even like on the other like remaining boards, it was usually the winning like strategy was like some amount of like treasures plus a few actions, and then the tricky part was deciding which actions to pick. But there were just so many fewer decisions that there were like fewer opportunities to make mistakes. The thing about playing Steph is that you play him, and then he makes all of these moves, and then you look at them in retrospect, and they're just all like good moves. It's very hard to find mistakes in his play, which then makes it very intimidating to play against him, because you're just playing along and you're doing these things, and every time you were doing something, you have to think about, all right, is Steph going to do something different here? Because if he's doing something different, it's pretty likely that he's doing something better than I'm doing, because he usually doesn't make mistakes. And then you just worry about all these like small incremental advantages, which like slowly build up. So I actually credit most of my win on that in that match to just having like fairly simple boards where we didn't have a lot of big decisions to make, and then that meant that I was like more likely to, I would be further, that because there were fewer decisions to make, it was, there wasn't as much advantage he could have gotten over me through his better decision making.
So do you think he's a better player than you?
I'd say that, yeah, I still think he's a better player than me, because based on the matches we played and based on like looking back at the things he was doing, I don't think I would have done anything super different from what he would have done. And he did a couple of things which I thought were better than the things I did. Or he basically made a couple of plays which they didn't take as much risk, but they were like, he basically made some plays which weren't as risk-taking, and I made some plays which did involve more risk, and it just like paid off better for me. But it's totally reasonable to like occasionally decide to do something which is like a bit safer, like for example buying a silver to make sure that you hit 5 next shuffle. I think he did that one game, and I did something silly by like buying trade route instead, but I hit 5 by complete luck, and then that put me ahead.
I see. So you made better shuffle luck than him? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Nicely done. So is that's probably the most memorable match you've ever had in any of your competitive play, right? Or is there something else that comes to mind?
Let's see. I think that in terms of, I think maybe the only contender for that one would be one of the ones for Gokodom way back when, like probably the first Gokodom, and then that was my match against the Drowned Colonel. And the only reason that it's really memorable is that there's one game where I made this absolutely beautiful engine, and I have basically not been able to play anywhere near that good ever since. So it's a board where there is no plus buy, but there is King's Court, and there's some villages, and I think there is like moat for draw, but King's Court and moat is like enough draw to like do whatever you want, and there's also forge. So the thing is that the only way to gain cards besides buying them was either workshop or forging things into other things. So I think ADK in that game, he did a thing which was more like money based to slowly build up into like buying colonies each turn, because this was a colony platinum game. I decided to do something crazier, which was There is also a tactician in the game, so I did a double tactician deck using King's Court Moat for draw, using workshops to gain the, I think it was Walled Village that game. There were like one or two four-cost villages in that game. I think Walled Village and Village were in the game. So I used workshop to gain a ton of villages. I used double tactician to make sure I always started with 10 cards. King's Court Moat helped me draw through the rest of my deck. And then every turn I would gain like 3 to 4 or 4 to 5 cards costing 3 to 4 through workshop. And then I would forge 2 4-costs and a 3-cost into a colony each turn. And it was just completely ridiculous because my deck at the end of the game has no coppers, no estates. It's literally all actions. I have no way to gain cards besides forge, but the way it's set up is my deck is gaining a colony every single turn, ADK's deck is gaining a colony every single turn, and the instant that he doesn't gain a colony, I have enough gaining power to just, like, end the game and empty out, like, 10 cards in one turn. Or, like, empty out 2 piles each of which had, like, 4 or 5 cards. So, it was just, like, a completely ridiculous engine, and I like, did it thinking that, okay, this might work, and this is just, like, an interesting idea, and I'm just gonna have fun this game. And then it actually worked out. And it was just very elegant in a way, and I haven't been able to do anything that crazy ever since.
That's awesome. Yeah, you still remember it even now. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it was just because there were like a couple of turns in there where I think I actually told him this in chat, where I said, all right, I think this is going to be amazing, but if I make any mistakes here, it's going to look really dumb. But then I managed to like keep it together and then do this crazy like gain 3 cards, and then redraw them, and then force them into a colony, and then play a tactician to do it all over again, and never need to buy any treasures, and never need to buy any cards for the rest of the game, just only gain them.
Nice. So let's move on. What's your favorite Dominion card?
This is tough. So a while back, I would have told you Bureaucrat. Wow. When Taxman came out, I switched to Taxman. Now I think it's Develop.
What's so awesome about Bureaucrat and Taxman?
I think that there's just something very like beautifully subversive about the way that they just like gain you these treasures on top of your deck. Apparently that's what I like in a Dominion card, when it gains you treasures on top of your deck. I think the reason I liked Bureaucrat in the first place was that this was a time when like Bureaucrat was basically considered like one of the worst 4-costs in the game. It's still not good, but then I was like, I tried it out a couple times, and then I realized it was actually like not that bad. Like it was good in Guardians, for example. It's good with Duke, for example. And then I think that just sort of made it like feel like Bureaucrat was this like sort of like underdog card fighting against like the oppressive competitive Dominion community who all hates Bureaucrat. And I was like, no, guys, Bureaucrat's not that bad. I think now people, like, rate Bureaucrat correctly, which is, like, it is an okay card, but it's still certainly not that great. I guess, like, that's why when Taxman came out, I was, like, really interested in trying to make Taxman work, because it seemed like this was another card which would have, like, some hidden power to it, and that it would be better than it looked like it was. After I played with it a couple times, I realized, no, it's just actually really, really bad.
So it was that point that you converted to Develop?
Yeah, and now I do Develop because Develop is just a really, really hard card to play, and that's really, really interesting to me, just because that it's so hard to choose what card to develop, and it also matters when in your turn you do it, because the cards go on top of your deck, so you have to choose, do I do this in the middle of my turn, and then draw these cards, and then do more Develop shenanigans based on these cards? Or do I do it at the end of my turn to, like, set up a next turn better? Or do I just trash out a copper because I need to get rid of coppers? And there are just so many decisions involved with the card, and you can do so many crazy things with it. And that just makes it where it's... I would say that Develop is by far, like, the most skill-testing card in Dominion. And it's not a card that you will be able to use every time it's out, but it's definitely one where if you use it, you're going to have a lot of interesting choices to make.
Do you think you're very good with Develop?
No, I'm terrible with Evo. It's so hard. I don't know what I'm doing half the time.
Awesome. So do you have a least favorite card?
Let's see. Least favorite. I think I actually do like most of the cards now. I think like I kind of don't like Urchin a bit just when like my Urchins don't collide when I open Urchin, but I think that's just like part of the game. I would say that if there is a card I'd have to like slightly dislike. Let's see. What's a good one for those? I think Margrave actually is like, it's not that it's a bad card, it's just it's a little bit uninteresting in a sense, because it gives you everything you want in an engine for free. So it gives you the card draw, and then it gives you the plus buy, and then it gives you an attack. And normally the interesting part of Dominion engines is taking a bunch of cards which like give you just pieces of what you need. You then like clump them all together and you get something that's bigger than the whole of its parts. And with Margrave, then it's more like, all right, I'm going to have a village, and then I'm going to have a Margrave. And this is all I'm going to need in my engine. And then I'll like be able to draw cards, and I'll be able to buy multiple cards a turn, and my opponent will always start with three cards in hand. So it's just like, it's not. It's like, I liked it at first, and then after playing with it a bit more, I just started to find the card a little bit boring.
All the games with it felt the same.
Yeah, in a sense.
I see. Is there any card out there where you see it on the board and you're like, "Oh, I'm good with that card. I've got an advantage in this game because of that card."
I would say not anymore. I think that at this point, I don't like ascribe like any advantages to like specific cards or whatever. I know that back on ISO, I would used to do that with Ambassador just because a lot of people I played with didn't know about the power level of Ambassador back then. So it meant that I would open Ambassador and then they wouldn't, and then I'd be like, all right, this one is pretty much free. Or I would open Ambassador and they would open Ambassador, and then they would return one card instead of two in the first couple of shuffles. And then I would go, okay, I know how to play Ambassador better than this person. I think at this point, most of the people I play with, like, know, like, all of the standard conventions for playing Ambassador, so this doesn't really hold true anymore.
I
So I
see.
think it's, like, it's no longer about, like, cards anymore. It's just, like, here's the board and let's figure out how to play it, and yeah, that's it.
Okay. What about cards you're weak with?
So I guess like Develop, I'm bad with. Herald, I would say I'm also bad with, and Advisor, I'm bad with. I think maybe I've been getting better at those two more recently, but I would say I base that mostly on. There was like a couple of games I played with SCSN where he would use like, oh wait, SCSN and Andrew Iannacone when he used to still play Dominion, and they would use these crazy like Herald Advisor engines, which basically didn't. They took a long time to get going, and then they got going, and then they just completely destroyed me, and I had no idea what to do about this. Because when you don't have a critical density of Heralds or Advisors, your deck just feels super awful, and it feels like you're not doing anything. And the problem is that you basically just need to have patience that your deck will come together in the end. And then the problem is you try this, and then you have patience, and then the other person just wins before you can get going, and then you're just disappointed.
So do you have any advice that you can give that you've learned from your years of playing of Dominion for how to get better at the game?
So I would say that, well, I guess like if you're first starting out, then there's the standard advice, which is to try to like don't like overbuy terminal cards and just try to like buy some more treasures. Once you get to the point where you have an understanding of when it's okay to like buy an action and when you want to buy treasure instead, I would say that the big three things that are not immediately apparent in the game are managing your reshuffles, and then three pile endings, and thinking about your cards not on like a turn by turn basis, but on a shuffle by shuffle basis. So I guess let me maybe explain those a bit deeper. So I guess for managing reshuffles, then this is the idea where Let's say that you have a smithy in your hand, and then you already have eight in your hand, and the last two cards of your deck are like gold and silver, or you know this because you've been like keeping track of what cards you've seen to shuffle, then you shouldn't play your smithy because you'll already be able to buy a province. And if you play a smithy, you'll draw your gold and silver, you'll reshuffle your deck. Your gold and silver are not in that shuffle, so they miss the reshuffle, and then you don't have a gold and silver anymore for the rest of the next shuffle through your deck, and then you already had eight, so you didn't really get anything from it. And I think like managing reshuffle decisions is really complicated, and it's also where you can get out like a lot of advantage against other players. Since I think like even a lot of top players, they make like bad reshuffle decisions all the time. Like I make them all the time. I know like I think there was like one of the matches against Steph where I think maybe he got like a little frustrated or something because he triggered a really bad reshuffle and it just basically put him completely out of the game. I mean, he was like basically like 30% chance of winning, and then he did that, and then it went down to like 15. So he was in a bad position already, but it just made it worse. It's just that because choosing when the risk reward of drawing some more cards and having all of these cards which are already out miss the reshuffle is really complicated. And then in a similar vein, the idea of thinking about your card shuffle by shuffle is that in theory, like every card in your deck, you'll see it once through your given shuffle, and then cards you gain during that shuffle will only be seen during your next shuffle. So if you haven't shuffled your deck yet, and you say you buy a card on turn three and you buy a card on turn four, then it's the same as if you bought that card, the turn four card on turn three, and the turn three card on turn four. So the idea is you want to think about your deck not as what can it do every given turn, but what can I do with my deck this shuffle, or what can I expect to do with my deck this shuffle? And like that then ties into like how well you remember what cards you have in your deck, like maybe some estimates on how well you're going to be performing in the next few turns. And there's a lot of complicated thinking to go on there, but I would say that that's like another thing which is really helpful to think about. And then for three pile endings, I think that this is just a thing where sometimes you don't realize a three pile ending is coming, and then it happens, and then you basically don't have any way to protect against it. So it's just the idea of trying to position the game into a position where you are ahead in points and you can threaten to end the game very quickly, or you are behind in points and you are trying to stall out the game to where you can actually catch up in points. And it's the, I guess that when I say that it's important to consider three pile endings, I say it's important to make sure you have an understanding of when the game is going to end and then adjust in your play accordingly.
All right, that's a lot of really good advice. Like half of that stuff is stuff I need to do better. A lot of that's it's difficult to do, but yeah, it really does improve the quality of your play.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is it's also like sort of difficult to explain or difficult to show examples of. It's just a thing where you have to play a bunch of games and then you'll start noticing a few things and then you have to use that to try to, I guess, get better at the next game.
So you were talking about how Ambassador, a lot of people you've been playing, they're good at Ambassador now, they didn't used to be. Any other situations you feel like you've seen that play improve overall as a community?
Yeah, so I would say that early on, a lot of the advice in the older posts on the Dominion strategy site are based around the idea of you're building a mostly money-based deck and you're trying to get up to eight, because these decks are both a lot simpler than the crazy engine decks, and they're also like still like pretty competitive or consistent. I would say that lately, people have been getting a lot better at building engines and basically buying primarily actions and combining them in clever ways to get crazy, like explosive snowball-y decks that will just like hit two provinces every turn. I think that part of the reason for that is because like Dark Ages came out, which is like a really big like engine set. There's just a whole bunch of crazy cards in there which help you do all of these crazy shenanigans, all tied to buying actions instead of buying treasures. And I think it's also just like generally the community has gotten better just through like playing the game more, because a lot of a lot more boards lead to engines now than they did before, just because people know how to build the engines better, which makes them competitive with the money strategies that used to dominate on those boards. I feel like Marin was probably ahead of the curve on this, which is, he's like, I don't know if he still plays actively or not, but back when ISO was still a thing, Marin was known for doing all these completely crazy shenanigans with actions, and then he would basically, I think Theory had a really good like analogy of this, where he says that he's like slowly, like I guess like building like a ladder or something to climb up a cliff, and meanwhile Marin is like building this jetpack. And then Theory is like, he's like maybe like halfway up the mountain, and then he sees Marin just fly across him on his jetpack, and he has no idea how he even built it. So Marin was like a very ahead of his time engine player. I think his money game was like pretty weak, but his engine play was like completely ridiculous at the time. And I think that then like once Dark Ages came out, then people started like understanding like a bit better of what he was doing, and then that led to where we are now.
That's a really cool analogy for engine versus big money. I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, I think it's on the forum somewhere if you search for it, but I don't remember exactly where.
All right, is there anything that you feel like the community still isn't doing well? Like maybe before we weren't as good at building engines? What do you think we still don't do well?
Let's see. I think that this is sort of hard to answer, because I would say that the way that we understand Dominion now, the community tends to play it pretty well. And I would say that the only areas which are possibly weaker are the understandings of like tempo and timing, of where you basically say, for example, you have six early on, but you buy witch over gold because it's very important that you start the cursing right now. And I think that the idea of when to buy cards, like what shuffle you buy cards now versus what time you switch over to buying more treasures, is, or buying more victory cards, or switch over to buying like provinces and buying duchies instead of like buying more engine pieces, I would say that we still don't really understand that well. Like, I don't understand it that well either. And that means that I think that's like an area where there's probably a lot more improvement to be figured out on when exactly you make that switch. And I think maybe in high-level play, people have these like good like heuristics which seem to work a good amount of the time, but nobody's really like sat down and tried to think about like, this is why I'm switching to it now. It's more like, I'm doing this now because it seems like a good time. And the other player says, well, if they're doing it now, I have to follow them, or else I'm going to be behind on victory points. And yeah, I think that it's just like the idea of timing when you like change your strategy is still a little iffy. And I'm not really sure like what we can do better on that, because I don't know how to do better there.
Oh, so you're not writing the article on this?
No, well, I've been like, I have like some vague ideas about this, but the problem is that they're all super vague ideas, and I'm not even sure if they're true or not, so. I mean, also, yeah, I might consider like writing this article, but the time I like first thought about writing this article would have been like a year ago, and now I'm just like, I don't want to write more things. I'm busy.
Articles are hard to write.
It's so hard to write. Yeah.
So, do you play games other than Dominion? You mentioned Magic before. Do you play game other board games currently?
I'd say that maybe not that often. There are a couple games that I've played multiple times. So, I would say I played Pandemic a few times recently. Not a lot to actually know a lot of the strategy, but enough to like have some understanding of what's good and what's not. I've also been I guess I played Coup a lot this summer, and that was just because it's like a nice relaxing game, and then you've played Coup with like the same group of people for like 10 or 15 times, and now you have this weird delicious metagame. I think Coup is like a very interesting game in that respect, where at first it's not that deep, and then the more you play with like a specific group of people, the deeper it becomes, because you all build up your own specific metagames about how you're acting, like when you're lying, when you're not. And that just makes the game a lot more interesting, in my opinion. Yeah, I think, like, other than that, there's, like, the standard, like, Euro games, like, I guess, Ticket to Ride. I played Agricola once, but I haven't played it since. I've played Sulkin, the Mayan Calendar, or whatever the name is, like, two times. But I would say that overall, I don't actually own any of these games, meaning I don't play them super regularly. And the only board game I play super regularly is Dominion right now.
Okay. So you're a student, you play a lot of Dominion, some other board games. Do you have any more time? And if so, what do you do with it?
I think that in my free time, it's sort of split between reading random things on the internet. So this is either like the Dominion Strategy forums, or there are actually like some good like web serials like Worm, which I like basically binge read 1 year. I would say that it's split between reading things online and then I guess like more standard video games. So the one I've been playing a lot recently is Binding of Isaac Rebirth, because an expansion pack for it came out, I forget when exactly, like 1 or 2 weeks ago. And it's just been basically like taking up a lot of my free time ever since. Because for people who don't know, Binding of Isaac is a roguelike where you're basically like you're moving around and you're shooting at enemies and then they're trying to shoot you and so on. And the game is both like very difficult in that it's expected you're going to die a lot of the time. And it's also completely like procedurally generated. So every time you play the game, you'll get out like a new experience, which means that you can get out a ton of replay time out of it. So I think I have like 60 or 70 hours on it, which is actually comparatively small for the community from what I understand. And I guess that the other video game that I've been playing a lot recently was Dust Force, which I guess I don't play as much now because Binding of Isaac has been taking over a lot of things. But Dust Force is, it's like you're a janitor and you have a broom and you walk over dust to clear it, and it's basically a platformer, but it's just a very smooth platformer and it's very difficult. And then you make a dumb mistake and you die, but then you can retry again within literally less than a second. You're back at the start of the level. So it has this very addictive like positive feedback loop where you're doing things and then you're still dying a lot, but you can see that you're slowly getting better at the game. And it turns into a very more, it's very much one of those games where you're like, all right, I'll just try this one more time, because every try is like 30 seconds or so. And then you look at the clock and realize you've been playing this game for an hour and you're not sure where your life went, but yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we're gonna wrap up here, but what would you say your chance of winning the whole thing is at this point?
The whole thing,
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say like five, because the thing is that even if I win my match against Puppy, which I think is like, I think that match is like probably going to be a bit close. Then it's like playing against like either Mick or SCSN is like very daunting. So,
So 100%
I mean,
chance.
I'm pretty sure I said five. I mean, like, I would have like given like a 5% chance of making top four in the first place. So maybe that five will turn into 100 or something. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'll certainly be rooting for you. It's much less embarrassing to be knocked out by the guy who eventually won the thing. So you have all
Yeah.
of my support.
Yeah, I felt like that in I think one of the Gokudans too, where Andrew Anakin won, because he knocked me out in like round of 16 or something.
Hey, he knocked
And
me out of that one too.
hey, yay. Yeah.
Nice. Well, thanks for speaking with us. Thanks for taking the time to do the audio interview. I hope a lot of you guys out there enjoyed it, and I'm really glad we got to know one of our finest Dominion players on the forum just a little bit better through this.
I still don't think I'd call myself that.
You are one of the
And
four best, man.
well, one of the four best according to this single elimination tournament. I
Sounds
think that
watertight to me. Does Pubby own cards, or are you guys playing base only semifinals?
I really hope Puppy owns cards. If Puppy does, If Tubby doesn't own cards, I might be like forced to actually buy all the expansions because I don't want to play a base-only six-game match. I've done that before. Like, I think I did that against I think I did that against Soul Knight and one of the Gokadoms, and it's just like not that interesting.
I think we all hope that somebody owns some cards for that match. I believe it's being streamed, right?
Yeah, so I believe that it's going to be streamed on MickQ's channel because I'm going to be sharing my screen with Mick. Mick is going to stream it, and then he's going to commentate over my perspective. So it's going to be very interesting to go back to that match and see every point where Mick disagrees with me, and I'll have to realize how I've been playing this game horribly.
Either that or better than the number one seed in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that happens.
There you
That
go.
would be cool.
Nice. So when is that?
So that's going to be, I believe, 6:30 Pacific time. So, Pacific time today, actually. And right now it's like 1:30 p.m. So like 5 hours from right this moment.
Okay, maybe the audio will be out by that point, so hopefully you can watch it live. But I wish you good luck in that match. I'm rooting for
All
you.
right, thanks.
Yeah, and thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, it was fun.